Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this program is called World Watchers, and it's broadcast number 702, May the 20th, 1985. I want to correct one statement I made last week on the program, and if you have the sheets that accompany the tapes, you can make note on broadcast 701. I was stating in the book by John Tolan, the book Battle of the Bulge, about Maxwell Taylor, who was indeed in the Battle of the Bulge. He was a commanding general of the 101st Airborne Division. But I went on to say that Maxwell Taylor worked with John Singlaub in the Pentagon at the present time. It's not Maxwell Taylor. He's dead. It's Edward Lansdale. Taylor went on from the Battle of the Bulge area to Vietnam, where he's important in the destruction of villages, the counterintelligence, and the Phoenix program. And he worked over there with William Colby, who later became director of the CIA at home, and in Vietnam with Edward Lansdale and John Singlaub. And after Vietnam was over, and at the current time working in our Defense Department, is John Singlaub with Edward Lansdale. William Colby also is part of the operations to fund the Contras and the covert war to overthrow the Sandinistas, and also they fund the military dictatorship in El Salvador, and helped the repression, genocide of Indians in Guatemala. The whole Central American landscape is part of this team, but the one person not surviving from the past who is not part of it happens to be Maxwell Taylor. The others worked together, Lansdale and Colby, at the Battle of the Bulge, but not Taylor. He's dead, so I want to correct that. It was Lansdale and not Taylor who was with John Singlaub at the Pentagon. One quick quotation of the week of Henry Kissinger. This is from the Washington Star, Reverend Moon's paper, with a picture of Henry Kissinger. Quotation for the day. Americans tend to treat foreign policy as a subdivision of psychiatry instead of a real world matter. Henry Kissinger. Translated, it means you seem to have heart or empathy or identification with the beheadings and the bloodletting down there, where the real world is one of blood and guts, and I, Henry Kissinger, run Central American policy. Again, quote, Americans tend to treat foreign policy as a subdivision of psychiatry instead of real world matter. I think he's a subject for psychiatry. More than enough. Now, last week you saw the burning down of 60 homes in Philadelphia. An organization titled MOVE, N-O-M-O-V-E, that has no other meaning. The head of MOVE is Ramona Africa, a gentleman who was not available. He escaped the fire, obviously an agent provocateur, trained by our CIA and counterintelligence, I'm sure, like Idi Amin was trained by Frank Turple, leading these people this position. He sent a letter to the mayor that was the justification for burning things down, that the body of America will soon fall, and we mean it. Now, that kind of talk that came out of this black man, Ramona Africa, is identical to the voice of the Aryan Nation, the National Alliance, of what would happen to America starting May the 1st. And sure enough, America began to look bombed out, just like they said, and burned out, and the police force were willing to do it, and so was the mayor. His justification was a letter saying that somebody was going to burn the neighborhood. Well, the next thing you do, because they're on the payroll anyway, is just bring in the fire department and keep hosing the place. And if they set a fire, you put the fire out. You don't tell the men not to show up. Just because Ramona Africa said he's going to burn the place doesn't mean that you tell the fire department they can't come to the fire. Another story, bomb was meant to gain entry. They knew what they were doing with that plastic explosive, and particularly if they didn't know, they'd send in the fire department. Now, Ronald Reagan's whole shtick has been the Reichstag terrorism. Any of you that have listened to me for 14 years know the A to Z of that. Attorney General Edwin Meese isn't a lawyer. He's a soldier. His blood and guts is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and I did a program at the time of the elections and before the renomination of Edwin Meese on all the military connections of Edwin Meese to the Emergency Service and National Guard, and his development and dependence upon them to keep people down as the system gets tighter, and it's going to get tighter. I exposed this kind of operation in my article, The SLA is the CIA, and referred to Dr. Marcus Foster and the warnings and letters that by the Nazi Party in California that they were going to shoot Dr. Foster, which they in fact did with a cyanide bullet, which is in fact a Nazi weapon, and it was done by white people, not black people shooting a black man with cyanide. The SLA is the CIA is an article you should read to understand the MOVE organization. It was written at the same time the MOVE were active before. You can get that from Tom Davis, Box 1107, Aptos, California, 95003. Another description of California and Ed Meese and Ronald Reagan that goes into the police state, computers and mentality, is the one I did on the Korean Airlines for Larry Flint, February 84, the reprint in Hustler. Read that again. In fact, I was rereading that article again. I want to bring up certain points in a few minutes on it if I have time. Very important, the part of Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan and John Reese and Western Goals and John Singlaub. Singlaub, the conductor of the Central American War, the Contra War, the instrument through which Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer can carry these things through, in his role in California and the Western Goals, what they have in the computers, and the role of Meese and Reagan into terrorism agent provocateurs and documenting peace people and carrying on this kind of violence, just as happened in Philadelphia. Now, there were two reasons to believe that these movements would come on soon. One I've had on the air, and that was the statement of the Aryan Nations and the National Alliance of their plan for the escalation of terrorism in America to make it begin to look like Vietnam. And the other was the plan to fortify the White House, which I didn't get to share with you before the burning happened. But this is typical of the siege mentality of Ronald Reagan and the people behind him, the Secret Service, to make you know that something terrible is going to start happening in this country with these crazies and so forth. March 27th, there was a story in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Herald, White House, a fortress in the making, with a question mark, and the plans to close off all the streets around the White House to have a huge area that 9 miles around that nobody can get to or touch. The director of the Secret Service, John Simpson, first suggested the idea to the subcommittee last week on security of the White House. And I'll bring up John Simpson, John R. S-I-M-P-S-O-N, in a moment. He is the president of Interpol, international police that work with drug dealers and Nazis and known Nazi terrorists and terrorists from the Middle East and around the world, who wants to plant the idea like the Reichstag of fortifying the White House at a time where he's protecting the Nazis and the drug dealers and wants to turn America into a barricade. Mr. William Webster had articles. There's one from the Oregonian sent to me April the 12th. Security zone plan doubted. He doesn't want to close off 90 acres. That's several miles around the White House. 90 acres is what they want to keep around the White House where no one can see it or get near it. They even suggested putting a tunnel underneath it so people come to Washington, they could never even get near or see it. San Jose Mercury, April the 6th, has a map of the Secret Service study of the White House and lists all the streets that would be cut off. An editorial in the New York Times by Tom Wicker, The Security Mania, on what's going on in Washington. Is it really so necessary to protect the president or any future president? And he wonders, you know, if somebody really wanted them, they leave the White House and you could take them, say, going to Camp David every weekend. If he goes out to the country, goes through this road to Camp David, and that's secure, then certainly why in Washington, D.C., can't people see the building, this historic thing where the president lives? So he does leave there. He doesn't live in tunnels. Another story that is a provocateur type of thing, written by Robert Cooperman, K-U-P-P-E-R-M-A-N, a senior fellow at Georgetown University's Center for Strategic and International Studies, which is the home base of Mr. Arnaud de Borchgrave and Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen and Alexander Haig and Edward Luttwak and the terrorist mentality to whip us into a police state. He has an editorial with Adam Yarmolinsky, Yarmolinsky, big black letters, White House barricades aren't even a beginning. Like, just wait and see what's going to happen. All of this was in March. before the move thing took place, warning you about how dangerous it's going to be in America. Many stories, you probably saw them. I have maps here, Secret Service Eyes proposal to close the White House, and so forth. Now, April the 19th, in a newspaper called Peace and Solidarity, there's an editorial saying, take it to the streets. And that's one thing these people don't want. As Reagan says, you haven't seen anything yet. As it gets more repressive, people are going to go to the streets. So what they want is to barricade everybody and anyone making the policy and let the street people just scream and yell if they want. This article says it's time to take your protests into the street to show Reagan he had a mandate for the presidency, but he has no mandate for policies of war and racism. Well, they're wrong. If you didn't vote for him, you gave him that mandate. But they said on the East and West Coast, there's broad coalitions of people afraid of the warfare that we're going into, the minorities afraid of the racism that's coming out, the trade unionists, church, women, students, artists, and more will have to build a massive protest against Reagan's policies. Four more years of Reagan is scary for them, and they cited in this short period, 6 months since the election, he's cut off any dialogue in Nicaragua and wants to escalate the war against the elected people. He's sending napalm and bombs to the Salvadoran army to use against its own civilians. He's propping up the image of South Africa with George Shultz and the policy that what's going on down there, that he has an iron fist policy of death and destruction in Lebanon. And this was printed before it was revealed that the CIA trained Muslims, killed 80 women and children to get one Shiite that they didn't get. He got away like Ramona Africa in Philadelphia. That they're launching a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar Star Wars, which is to militarize the heavens, where before the election they didn't say that it was a first-strike offensive. That they're proposing the largest military budget ever and stealing from health, education, social services. This was written April 19th, a month before it was forced out of Caspar Weinberger, that they had a $50 million surplus in the Pentagon, and they're telling you you don't need Amtrak and public transportation or mental health facilities and so forth. They said he appoints attorney general who claims busing and affirmative action are bad. Well, he did that before the re-election. But it's listing all the things that have happened in 6 months. The awareness of people suddenly hit them at the end of the election, and 6 months later, they were saying, take it to the streets. Now, the man who's proposing that you change the face of America, that you close off the White House, that you don't see it and get near it, is Secret Service Director John Simpson, S-I-P-M-P-S-O-N. Now, there's a picture of John Simpson in Freedom magazine. Freedom is published by the Scientologists. And for the last 5, 6, 10 years, they've had articles on the Nazis and mind control experiments. Fletcher Prouty has an article in there on the CIA and domestic intelligence. I'll give you the address at the end of the program to write to Freedom and subscribe and order the current issues or the back issues, as many as you can afford. Because very early, they started to discover 11 years ago, the role of Interpol with J. Edgar Hoover. Interpol is international police. And they detailed the role of the Nazis with J. Edgar Hoover, who was vice president of Interpol. And currently, the president of Interpol is the same Secret Service agent, John Simpson, who wants to barricade Washington and works with the known Nazi and drug dealers and doesn't keep any lists. And according to the articles on Joseph Mengele and other people, they're not at all interested in Nazis. That's not terrorism. They're talking about the other kind. Now, May the 18th this week, a woman was awarded $39 million in Portland in an effort to break the Scientology organization completely. She claimed she joined it for 1 year. How much could she invest? She put $3,253 into it, and she sued them because they told her she could improve her eyesight and her intelligence in that 1 year, and they didn't improve her eyesight or intelligence. So the judge said that she could have $39 million. Now, the reason they let Bhagwan up in Oregon get off with what he's doing, or all these Buddhas and phony religions and cults do whatever they want, is that they don't challenge or talk about the Nazi connections. That's the kiss of death. When you make the connections of the Gestapo, the Waffen-SS, the Liebsdienst, the Death's Head, to our particular government. So this tough settlement of $39 million, which is totally out of line for no bodily injury or anything for 1 year to break their necks for writing continuous articles on Nazis and mental hospitals, Nazis and medical experiments, the CIA experimenting on people in South Africa, South African taking over our press and buying newspapers here for their favor. That's their punishment, and the judge in Portland, Oregon, made this settlement, which is absolutely ridiculous, would put them out of business. And as I say, that's their punishment against them for giving you these stories. Actually, in 1 year, she did increase her intelligence because she went from having nothing to making $39 million. So maybe the Scientologists increased her intelligence so much. It's a bad joke, but all of a sudden she's $39 million richer if she gets it. Now, what are the Scientologists telling you and me that's costing them so much money? I'll share it with you because this is one story just recently. It's from volume 17, number 6 of their Freedom newspaper that came out on the Interpol organization, and they're reviewing things that they have written for several years but may be new to many of you. It says, in September 1984, John R. Simpson, head of the United States Secret Service, was elected president of the International Criminal Police Organization. Inter means international, and POL means police. It's all one word, Interpol. International Criminal Police Organization. And that's the same man who wants to barricade for 90 acres around the White House. It says, for Americans concerned with freedom and their rights, they should look into Interpol and their role in the world. Beginning in 1974, Freedom began to disclose for researchers Interpol's Nazi past and how it was formed and the international scandal of Interpol. And that's the time when L. Ron Hubbard went into hiding and said he was going to be killed and wasn't seen since. And this would be enough to have him bite the bullet to print this kind of material. And if he is alive, I could understand why he would hide after this. His life wasn't worth a thing. Now, the article goes on. The Interpol was founded in 1923 in Vienna, Austria. This was the home base of Otto Skorzeny and Adolf Hitler and a lot of the top Nazis. And they were rebuilding after World War I the police system to fight labor union people and activists and people that they thought could be Bolsheviks or sympathetic to the communist revolution. So they'd have an international police that would pick up these people and follow them. Not the criminals. You know, to shoot a communist isn't a crime. To run over a Jew wasn't a crime. But it was formed in Austria in 1923. And in 1938, the Nazis, after Adolf Hitler was in, took complete control of Interpol. And during that time period, up till they invaded Poland in 1939, J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, was vice president of Interpol while working with Dr. Ernest Kalten Brunner, Kalten Brunner, and SS officer Reinhard Heydrich, Heydrich. When Hitler invaded Poland, J. Edgar Hoover took their pictures off the wall, but he was vice president with them. And remember that J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI was put into that office by Herbert Hoover when he was Secretary of Commerce, who was working for the rearmament of Germany and bringing these very Nazis into power. The article from Freedom says that the disturbing revelations primarily of the U.S. involvement with Nazi Interpol, and in 1940, the FBI still condoned and supported the Nazi police methods. That's such as the Night of the Long Knives, the massacres, the driving away of people, the concentration camps were being built. He condoned and supported their methods, and he helped print their most wanted notices in the Interpol magazine, describing American fugitives as Jews, as Jewish types, as Jewish race to identify certain people. The document showed that SS Gruppenführer Reinhard Heydrich, Gruppen is a title, G-R-U-P-P-E-N, Gruppenführer, F-U-H-R-E-R, Reinhard Heydrich, H-E-Y-D-R-I-C-H, the chief of the German security police, known as the Hangman, and he was the man who conceived the final solution along with Adolf Eichmann, Heydrich and Eichmann, under Otto von Bolschwing. The Hangman was president of Interpol from 1940 until he was murdered in 1942. He was succeeded by Ernest Kaltenbrunner, who headed Interpol until he was hung at Nuremberg in 1946. The United States was active with Interpol. They shared news and agency information and learned from 1968 to 1972, the president of Interpol, while we exchanged all this information, this is the time period after Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were killed, and when Richard Nixon's in office, when Klaus Barbie escalates and begins the cocaine dealing down in Bolivia with Joseph Mengele, who has total freedom down there, and Martin Bormann and those Nazis from Nazi Germany living in South America and traveling to Spain during this time period, and we'll do more of that chronology. Paul Dickoff, D-I-C-K-O-P-F, as president of Interpol from 1968 till 72, until it was revealed that he was a member of the Waffen-SS during World War II. The documentation showed his number, Waffen-SS number 3372959, and their photographs of Dickoff in his SS tracksuit and so forth. Now, this article goes on that Interpol had nothing to do with finding Nazi war criminals. It was obvious because Nazis were Interpol's friends. Amidst strenuous denials by Interpol officials, evidence continued to emerge that left little room for doubt that Interpol maintained its Nazi connections and also its Nazi mentality. Now, this is out of Freedom Magazine talking about Interpol, and the point is that the president of Interpol at the present time is the head of the United States Secret Service, John Simpson, and it's his idea to have that Reichstag siege mentality. He's working with the same people that created the Reichstag, or the takeover of Germany for Adolf Hitler, and he's the one who wants the 90-acre area around the White House secured, working with people, part of the Waffen-SS of the Nazi Germany team that are still living, still in power, and our president of Interpol, hiding the drug dealers and hiding the Nazis, wants to turn the White House into something that Adolf Hitler would have, this area around it for siege mentality, psychological reasons that we're under a state of siege. It's totally unnecessary that president flies to Santa Barbara. Someone could just bomb that shack. There's only one house on the mountain. The whole thing is ridiculous, but it's psychological and it's useful. When you turn yourself then into a police state, you're already protected. That's a dangerous parallel to the past with the same people working in the same function that they had earlier, and if they had just died off. And that's the importance of talking about these Nazis, is that World War II didn't end, but it continued, and those people moved into our agencies, and we share the agencies with them. Now, last week I mentioned that the search for Mengele will continue, and there will be a frantic upheaval in many ways, and I suggested even banking matters, where Martin Bormann actually controls Chase Manhattan Bank and many other banks in this country. And if the heat gets too heavy for Mengele, you'll see a lot of shifting sands. Now, I just want to give one example of what happened this week and how this statement that I made connects to the past and Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele. After last week's broadcast, you read the story on the run for the banks in Maryland, and they said they could only check out $1,000 a month. The particular people whose money is deposited there, depositors besiege Maryland Thrift. This is a story from the Washington Post about the frantic problem in Maryland just last week. And Maryland is the location of many CIA and government people from Washington, D.C., who would be hurt by this particular action. Another story along those lines, May the 7th, 1985, bank failures expected to rise. FDIC puts the number of institutions on the problem list at 949, an all-time high. That 949, almost 1,000 banks are ready to collapse. New York Post, March 23rd, has an article by J. Peter Grace, the master of them all, the co-worker, co-partner of Frederick Flieg, the Nazis from World War II, and with Otto Ambrose, the chemist from Auschwitz, and I.G. Farben. J. Peter Grace is saying in the New York Post that the American banking system is going to collapse. You're not safe. He says the banking system is fundamentally unsafe. He said, I suggest and urge bank depositors to get their cash out and put it in gold. The federal government has more than $2 trillion insurance in force, and the Grace Commission determined that the reserves are not actually funded and are thus inadequate to meet potential future claims. They're not really there. He says, this is what J. Peter Grace says, against this $2.1 trillion potential liability, the Grace Commission found that the government has accumulated reserves sufficient to cover only 1%, repeat, 1% of the potential claims when the banks fail. Now, who protects you when the banks fail? The FDIC, if you're lucky, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. From the Washington Post, February the 14th, 1985, Rousselot, a candidate for FDIC. John Rousselot, former one of the founders and high officials of the John Birch Society, has been nominated as chairman of the Federal Deposit Insurance Company. The Reagan administration has him high on the list to be chairman of the FDIC. Now, Rousselot was the co-founder of the Ronald Reagan political campaign, along with Patrick Frawley. Frawley, a member, early member of the Birch Society and a Knight of Malta, and Rousselot of the John Birch Society with Robert Welch out on the West Coast was one of the people who put his arms about Ronald Reagan and pushed him into the governorship, and then eventually they catapulted him into the presidency. John Rousselot would be in charge and chairman of the FDIC. Now, as an early founding member of the John Birch Society and continuously with it, he's worked with a fellow named Dr. Revillo Oliver, a professor of classics who I mentioned several weeks on the air, May the 6th, program number 700, if you have the bib sheets. And I was talking about the relationship of the World Nazi Organizations in Toronto of Mr. Zundel, Ernest Zundel, who says there was no Holocaust, and his work with Liberty Lobby out in California and in Illinois and in Munich, Germany, with Otto Skorzeny, and the role in Illinois of Zundel with Revillo Oliver of the John Birch Society, who helped fund Ronald Reagan. Now, Revillo Oliver is part of the John Birch Society with John Rousselot, but he's also on the board. He's a member of the council of a committee to restore the Constitution, run by Archibald E. Roberts, a lieutenant colonel, who has books and articles out, a newsletter on the Federal Reserve and the national debt. And the point is that the FDIC is in trouble, that the far right wing and people like Rousselot with Mr. Oliver and Mr. Roberts want to rearrange some other financial structure that may or may not be right, but have direct links down to South America. And I did try to describe a diagram of Revillo Oliver with Otto Skorzeny down in Buenos Aires in Argentina with Martin Bormann and with Joseph Mengele. So when I say that Mengele and Bormann can shake the banks, you have J. Peter Grace saying there is no money. You have a chairman coming in, John Rousselot of the Birch Society, who will be in charge of the FDIC to decide which banks are covered that can have the 1%, the possibility of almost 1,000 banks folding, and the connections of these people to Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele and the Nazis and the late Otto Skorzeny, of course. But it's a very close connecting link that will affect the banks that are affecting it, and that's why J. Peter Grace can smile and say, I told you so, because he's part of that inner team. Now, I'm going to shift gears here, not to anything separate from what I've talked about, but it's continuous, and it has to do with Joseph Mengele again, because of the relationship of Mengele to Bormann and the banks, and also to Klaus Barbie, and the rush to find Joseph Mengele at this time. Ted Rubenstein called me this weekend. He's a researcher with a good, fast eye, saw Newsweek magazine, and said, run and get Newsweek of May 20th, 1985. And on page 37 is the name that it took Mae Brussel 2.5 years to smoke out. It says in black letters, keeping in touch, Joseph Mengele still has a lawyer in Frankfurt named Fritz Steinacker, S-T-E-I-N-A-C-K-E-R. And recently, the attorney went beyond no comment. He was asked about his relationship with Joseph Mengele, and he said, yes, I have represented Mengele, he told Newsweek, and I still do represent him. Now, it'll take us probably till 1987 or 1989 for them to give more connections of this case and how Steinacker was smoked out, because of the deposits in Mangley's account that come from Klaus Barbie, or that John DeLorean took them out of his company to put them there. But things are happening a little faster now, and finally, Steinacker's name is in the news. I'll take a one-minute break now and come back some more to Joseph Mengele and the importance of the Mengele story and why it's in the news at this time.